This is Werewolf the Podcast. Somewhere to the eastward, a wolf howled, lightly, questioningly. I knew the voice, for I had heard it many times before. It was George, sounding the wasteland for an echo from the missing members of his family. But for me it was a voice which spoke of the lost world which was once ours before we chose the alien role, a world which I had glimpsed and almost entered, only to be excluded at the end by my own self. Farley Mowat, Never Cry Wolf.
Hello, folks. Have you ever wished you could have an easy way to find gameplay videos and podcasts, or just media in general that deals with your favorite White Wolf role-playing games? Or have you ever wished you could find a forum to share gameplay that you have recorded, one which wouldn't be drowned out by random posts and discussion, so that your media could get the attention you want? Well, we have the answer for you in a Facebook group we run called White Wolf RPGs Gameplay and Media. The group is specifically ran with the sole intent of it being a one-stop shop for people to view or share media involving the games we all love. We take thorough steps to ensure the page does not become cluttered and is easy to traverse. We are currently over 1,000 members strong, and we are continuing to rapidly grow with new media being shared every day. Stop on by. We hope to see you there.
Hi, this is Josh Heath. Welcome to another episode of Werewolf the Podcast. Today we're going to be reviewing Ways of the Wolf. Ways of the Wolf was published in 1993 by White Wolf Publishing. The main author was Steve Crow, with a little bit of additional material from Karen Halther, and it was developed by Bill Bridges and quite a few other people involved in art design. The artists were Brian Wackwitz, Dan Smith, art director was Richard Thomas. So, real quickly, this is a short book. It is 74 pages. And it was the fourth book released for the Werewolf the Apocalypse line. That was released after Rage Across New York, Rite of Passage, which we've already reviewed on this show. So what is Ways of the Wolf? Well, Ways of the Wolf is a detailing of how wolves act and how playing a Lupus Garou would be different than playing one of the Hamadborn werewolves. So, as we've mentioned before, there are three basic types of werewolves based on breeding background. So, Hamids are human-born, Lupus are werewolf-born, or wolf-born, I should say, and Metis are born of two werewolves. Now, in 1993, this would have been a helpful book because it focuses on information that would have been something you would have to go to an encyclopedia for, or you'd have to go to the library to get out books on wolf behavior. Today, we can do a lot of that sort of research online, fire up the internet, learn about wolves, read a lot of articles, and one of the things that I think you'll find is that this particular book is incredibly out of date when it comes to the quality of research on wolves and exactly what wolves are like. To speak to that, I would actually say that there is no way I would ever recommend anyone ever purchase this book. I know that's really early in the podcast for that sort of comment, but overall, both from a design perspective of werewolf and an information on wolves perspective, this is one of the few books that I would say there is never a reason for you to pick it up. In fact, I think you should ignore that it exists and kind of move on with your day. Now, I could leave it at that, but I think I am going to continue doing the review just so you have it in case you're interested. You're like, what is in this book and why is this guy saying, hey, this isn't something you should look into? Well, the first thing I'll dive into really quickly is the story. The beginning story is told from the perspective of a Wendigo lupus-born werewolf. And the story is a mess of faux native traditions and totally inaccurate representations of native tradition, native belief, native life. So from that perspective, it's a frustrating element of this. It drastically reduces differences in tribes, uses terminology that these individuals from these tribes themselves would never use themselves. It's a gross simplification, and it's not an engaging story. So it's really poor from every perspective that you can imagine. Now again, in 1993, would I have necessarily given the same sort of critiques against someone? I don't know, but I do have to say that it's particularly frustrating today to look back at this book and go, wow, there was a lot of cultural, I don't want to say cultural appropriation, but there was a lot of cultural misunderstanding about what native traditions were like, and you see that a lot in this book. Now, the book goes into, it has a couple of different chapters. The introduction goes over a little bit about why wolves are important to werewolf, obviously. Three major chapters, chapter 1, 2, and 3. There's an appendix, a story, and an introduction. So the three chapters, chapter 1 is Born of Wolf, and this goes into what wolves are like. And it effectively reads like a essay about wolves and about wolves' do. Of course, as I mentioned, the problem with this is it's not very accurate to the scientific knowledge that we have today. It's not terrible. There's actually some parts in here that I thought, wow, this is actually something that people probably should know and don't seem to know. One, that wolf packs are set around family units. They're usually one alpha male and one alpha female who are the breeding pair, and then they raise up their children, as opposed to this misunderstanding that wolf packs are unconnected groups who are trying to seek dominance over each other. It's understandable if parents are in charge and they teach their children and then their children leave and go out and start their own packs, which is presented in this book, but there's lots of other misconceptions about wolves. One of the things they mention is that sight is the predominant scent or sense that wolves use, and to my knowledge, and in every other scientific sort of article I've ever read, scent is the central way that wolves and dogs interact with the world. So I think it's interesting that they say that sight is the central sense that wolves use, which doesn't appear to be accurate. There's lots of little things like that throughout this book that just make me go, man, I understand that this was useful in 1993, but today there's no way that I would suggest this book. They also talk about things like wolves are more connected to Gaia and the natural world, and they have this innate distaste of humanity. And that could be true, but it doesn't necessarily appear to be true. Wolves don't always have a natural distrust of humans. If we look at this from a World of Darkness standpoint, it makes more sense, but it's still a little frustrating to see, okay, you're equating some noble savagery to wolves, and from there, the different tribes that are connected to the lupus or wolves, and that just builds on the frustrating elements of werewolf, that this could be a good game, and in first edition, these elements appear to be developed in a kind of haphazard way. So you get a lot of information, like I said, about what it means to be a wolf in chapter 1, but pretty boring chapter overall. And like I said, you can find more effective and more accurate information online these days. Chapter 2 is about the Lupus Garou. So it's specifically about what does it mean to be born as a wolf and become a werewolf, which on the whole seems like a helpful thing. If you're going to be playing a lupus-born werewolf, you should understand, one, what it means to be a wolf, and two, what it would mean to be a werewolf amongst wolves. There are some things here that seem to make sense. It's kind of obvious that Garou would end up being the alphas of a pack. They're the strongest, they're the most dominant. They certainly have more forethought and longer lives, so they can kind of establish themselves as the great-grandfather of groups of packs within an area. And at one point, I played a character that had that as his background. He was effectively the great-grandfather wolf of a whole group of werewolf or wolf packs in a region. It seems to make sense, so that's helpful. One of the things that I find bizarre in this chapter is that the rite of passage, that werewolves do rites of passages for lupus only, and that they chase them to start their rite of passage. There's a lot of ideas that Werewolf was trying to connect into with werewolf myths, but I think the way they've done so is odd, and it doesn't work really well. And you see that they change a lot of those things as the game becomes second edition and revised. They move a little bit away from those ideas. The other thing is that there seems to be this misinterpretation of lupus as almost their own tribe of werewolves. They talk about the 13 different tribes. They talk about the Red Talons in particular, because the Red Talons are a lupus-only tribe of werewolves. But then they say things like, the lupus once celebrated the Ragabash Auspis among them when they first shared equal power with the Hamids. As their numbers shrank with the encroachment of the humans, the lupus grew less tolerant of the pranksters in their midst. Which doesn't make any sense. If any being, any werewolf, is born under a specific moon sign, then you would continue to have different werewolves that are born under those moon signs. It doesn't make any sort of sense that they would suddenly have less Ragabash. Would they do that because they're killing them off, or what? What is the point of that idea here?
High Level Games, the industry's first choice in taking your games to the next level. We are a podcast, blog, and new media network at highlevelgames.ca. We have blog posts about all of your favorite games going up 5 days a week, and a podcasting network with actual plays and shows that discuss role-playing games, with more rolling out all the time. We are on iTunes, Twitch, and YouTube. Find out more information at highlevelgames.ca, a site that certainly isn't controlled by a shadowy board of directors of otherworldly origin. That's highlevelgames.ca.
Please. Help. They're coming.
One of the other interesting points to note in this chapter is that it talks about key NPCs going to the Grand Moot and representing their tribe at the Grand Moot with everybody else there. So it sounds like when they're talking about Grand Moots, where with all of the tribes of werewolves, that that is something that happens regularly enough that every werewolf in the world goes to. And that's not something that's present in later werewolf books. There are way too many werewolves to have a single Grand Moot of the entire Garou nation happen. It's thematically really interesting, but if in this book, where it seems like it's indicating maybe there are 600, 700, maybe 1,000 Garou worldwide, then fine. You know, that makes a lot of sense. But in a world where there are 13 to 14 different tribes of werewolves, all with hundreds of members of those tribes to themselves, it doesn't make any sort of sense that thousands of people would travel, thousands of warriors would travel to one specific place to have a moot every year. From a strategic warfare standpoint, that is a terrible decision, and it doesn't seem to fit with the later storylines of Werewolf the Apocalypse. It fits with the small pack, small local focus, things being more directed at what particular groups of werewolves are doing early on in the game, which is one of the game's early focuses. So that makes sense. That fits thematically with where first edition is, but it doesn't fit long-term with what Werewolf becomes as a game line. They talk about, in this same chapter, the lupus among other tribes. They say that the Bonars have no lupus among them because the Bonars live within cities. It doesn't make a lot of sense. We know that that wolves can be urban, but they put it out there, Bonars have no lupus among them. They set up this integral fight between the Glasswalkers and all ferals, which is another term that they use for lupus, which again, why would these various different lupus werewolf feel a connection just because they're wolf-born to other lupus werewolves? That's not how wolves work. That's not how packs work. That's not how anything is set up in the game, so it doesn't make sense as a basic setup. Goes through all the different tribes. Those are just the ones that I think stood out to me as strange and as difficult for me to wrap my mind around. There's also, problematically, the use of the word Indian to refer to Native Americans throughout this book. This was before the preference to the term Native American was used in almost every text. Still, I'd like to point it out for anyone that's reading this that might be Native American or is a Native nerd that this book would frustrate the shit out of you because it's annoying. There's lots of little annoying things that you're just like, that's not accurate, that's not really appropriate, that's not interesting. It's all of those things. So it's hard. It's hard to reconcile it with anyone that's got an inkling of real information about Native tradition. So, something to be aware of. The book goes into, in the appendix, provides several different things that are useful, though. Some characters, some NPCs, some important NPCs, their statistics, who they are, why they're important, what they mean to the nation. And all of that's pretty interesting. All that's really helpful for running a werewolf game. You know, understanding how things like disease impact wolves is helpful. What hunting is like for wolves. There's some NPCs here for actual hunters that would hunt wolves. Just an interesting side thing they add. There is also a few new gifts. So there are gifts in this. There are new rituals, which are a little bit more focused on lupus. There are some references to spirits from Native American tradition as well as plant spirits and things like that, creatures that would be in the wilderness that lupus might interact with. So those are the type of things that you see in this book. You also have great, they call them great beasts in this, which are cryptids. So you have dinosaurs, you have Sasquatch, you have a great white shark. There are just a couple of these, but it's an interesting sort of random addition to the book. There are also various archetypical characters that someone could grab and play right out of the book. So, okay, I want to play this type of lupus character, and you're given an option to be able to play that. So that is Ways of the Wolf, which again was released in 1993, written by Steve Crow. And I'm going to provide a link to DriveThruRPG on our podcast information, just so you have it. But that being said, please probably don't pay for this book. There's really no need to do so. If you're interested in an update or something that has some of the same information, you can check out The Changing Way, which is a newer Werewolf 20th Anniversary Edition book that includes some of the same information. Overall, Ways of the Wolf, not a book I would pick up, not a book that I would suggest you spend any sort of money on. But that's the review. I hope you've enjoyed it. This has been Josh Heath with Werewolf the Podcast.